So it's wonderful, as I said, to see everybody. This parsha, Parshat Vayeshev, is very special to me, specifically because my youngest son, it is the bar mitzvah parsha of my youngest son. Last year, he had his bar mitzvah. He's laning this parasha again this Shabbat here in my shul. So Parshat Vayeshev has a very special special place in my heart. And tonight's shiur, also, I feel also whenever I teach Parshat Vayeshev, I really feel very nostalgic because a lot of shiurim that I've heard in my life are very much embedded in my, so to speak, they around the stories of Yosef. Some of the earliest shiurim that I remember and that really impacted on me in a very deep way were on the Joseph narratives, and specifically from the people that I consider my great teachers in Tanakh come from the Joseph narratives. I had the great zchut and when I was a teenager to hear Rabbi David Silber when he was first, so to speak, coming on the scene, when he gave at the early years when he gave the Parsha Shir at Lincoln Square Synagogue every Shabbat after the Hashkama Minyan. Really even at the beginning of Drisha. And so many of the insights that I heard, 40 years ago still stay in my head. And some of them I'll come back to tonight. There are people on this Zoom who've very close students of Rabbi Silber. And so I'm sure that I'm not going to be mechadesh when I quote some of those insights. And sometimes I don't remember what he said 40 years ago and what I noticed and what just kind of stayed with me. Number two, many of the early shiurim that I heard from my teacher in Tanakh, Rav Yoel Ben Nun, were on these parshiot. And as well, I heard many shiurim from Rabbi Soloveitchik on these parshiot. And most recently, I've had the pleasure of reading, there's many, many books that have been written on Sefer Bereishit in the last decade, last two decades, from Leon Kass, on the beginning of wisdom through my dear friend, Rabbi Tzvi Grumet, through most recently, my very dear friend as well, Rabbi Yoni Grossman, who's written, four books on the Sefer Bereishit in Hebrew. Some of them have been translated into English. And so I don't think I'm going to say too many chidushim tonight. It's a kind of an amalgam of things that I've thought about for many years, as well as insights that from these great teachers of Tanakh and others as well. So let's start. We're not really going to get beyond Perek Lamed Zayin tonight. It's a very rich parsha. And so I really want to focus on Perek Lamed Zayin. But to understand Perek Lamed Zayin, we have to go back a little bit and just, put the frame so we understand more deeply what is the tension in the story? Why are these tensions? How does the text, play out the tensions? All that we'll look at. But first we have to set the table. And when we set the table, what I mean by that is, of course, we look back to Yaakov's family. So Yaakov, of course, who was the central figure of the last number of Parshiot, the story of Yaakov and his travels and his travails and his building a family. Yaakov, of course, is the last of the Avot, the last of the patriarchs. And Jacob is, of course, is the last one, so to speak, who fathers a family. And of course, the great in terms of the patriarchs and the matriarchs. And of course, from the perspective of the rabbis, Jacob is kind of, fulfilling. He's the one who's going to fulfill the destiny of the covenantal family. He is going to have a family that's going to turn into a people, right? Later on, they're going to be called Bnei Yisrael, the children of Israel. We're not called, sometimes we're called Bnei Avraham, Yitzchak, V'Yaakov, but ultimately the dominant nomenclature in the Bible and subsequently is Bnei Yisrael, the children of Israel. Israel becomes the patriarch the great patriarch par excellence. And if we go back, of course, Jacob receives the blessing of Abraham that's been passed on. So if you turn back again with your, I hope everyone has a chumash with them. If you turn back to chapter 17, when Abraham receives a special blessing, a covenant, a covenantal blessing, at the end of chapter 17, I'm sorry, in chapter, the beginning of chapter 17, if you turn to chapter 17 in your Genesis, and Abraham was 99, and God appeared to him, and he appeared to him with a new name. Up until this point, the name of God that has appeared to Abraham is Elohim, or Yudke Vavke, Elohim, or the Tetragrammaton. For the first time, God appears with a new name. Vayomer Elav, Ani El Shaddai. Hitalech lifanai ve'yei tamim. I am El Shaddai, whatever that means. Go before me and be whole. You have here what we would call creation language. Of course, reminds us of the creation passage of much, much, right? Tov ma'od, hine tov ma'od, and the double ma'od. And then later in this passage, God repeats in verse 6, V'hifreiti otcha b'ma'od ma'od. So this is basically the, what we would call pru urvu. It's just inverted, right? The be fruitful and multiply. But this time it's, multiply and be fruitful. Arbe v'efrecha ma'od ma'od. So you have a lot of creation language that Abraham is the beginning of a new creation. And God says to him, as part of this covenant, I'm going to change your name. V'lohi kare od et shimcha Avram, v'yash shimcha Avraham ki av hamon goyim netaticha. You will no longer be called Abraham, Avram. You'll be called Abraham, and you will have children. V'ivreite otcha b'mod ma'od netaticha legoyim u'malachim imcha yitzei. I'm going to make you numerous, and you're going to have kings. It's a tremendous blessing. It's a blessing of you're going to have kings, and you're going to control a territory, and you're going to be a nation, and the whole world is going to be blessed through you. This is also the blessing that Jacob passes on to, excuse me, this is the blessing that Jacob passes on, Isaac passes on to Jacob when Jacob is running away, and Jacob receives, if you look in chapter 27, when Rivka convinces, chapter 28, Rivka convinces Yitzchak to send Jacob away. So in chapter 28, verse 1, Vayikra Yitzchak al Yaakov Vayivarech oto, Kum lech padena aram beta bituel, Ve'el Shaddai Yevarech otcha. He uses the name of God, which was used in the Brit Milah. And El Shaddai should bless you, V'yafrecha v'yirbecha, and he should make you numerous, fruitful, and multiply. V'ayita likhal amim, V'yitain lecha birkat Avraham, and he should give you the blessing of Abraham. So Jacob here has engaged in the covenantal transfer. It's the covenantal transfer of the blessing of Abraham. And now Jacob can go. Unfortunately, Jacob is not able to immediately fulfill that because he's got to run away from his brother, who might want to kill him. And he also gets stuck in the house of Laban. Gets stuck in the house of Laban. And in the house of Laban, of course, in Lavan, he ends up marrying. And he has a lot of children. And of course, we all know from the beginning that there's a lot of tension in this family. It's a family that starts off on the wrong foot. It starts off on the foot where someone is deceived and has to marry someone that he doesn't really love, at least at first, or certainly we don't see that intense love. And On the other hand, the one that he did love from the very outset, he is not able to get right away, and he has to work even harder. And so we have this. And of course, the Bible describes this. If you look in chapter 29, in verse 18, Vayehav Yaakov et Rachel. And Jacob did love Rachel. And you have the whole story there, and he works for Rachel. And then, of course, Leah is supplanted. Rachel is supplanted with Leah. And he feels cheated. And he ends up doing that. And then in the end, he has, the Bible says in chapter 29, verse 29, verse 30, Vayavo Gamel Rachel, he marries Rachel. Vayehav Gamet Rachel Mileah. Even though he had been already living for 7 years with Leah, he still loved Rachel more than Leah. And of course, the Bible tells us, Vayar Hashem Kisnua Leah. So it's not just that Leah is not loved, but she is presented as hated. Keep that term in the back pocket. She's hated. She's hated. And of course, in recompense, God gives her children. And she speaks of the pain, Ki ra'a Hashem be'onyi. God sees that I have suffered. And then she has Shimon, Vatomer, ki shama Hashem, ki snua anochi. God saw that I was hated twice. Leah is either described by God's perspective as being hated, which of course is a very strong language. I don't necessarily mean that, you know, Yaakov went around and screamed at her. But in relationship to Rachel, clearly she was not loved in the way that Rachel was loved, and therefore she was snu'am. That's what the text says. The text says she's hated. That's what it says. I didn't make it up. That's what it says. So again, you can either read it as, really? Even if you want to soften it, it's only in relationship to Rachel, she certainly felt herself in a very difficult position. And then, of course, so you have that tension. You have the tension between Leah and Rachel, which bubbles up in a tension between Jacob and Rachel. In chapter 30, verse 1, Vatera Rachel ki lo yalda li Yaakov, vatikanei Rachel ba'achota. Keep that also in the back pocket. Keep it in the back pocket. So listen to this family. You have sinna, and you have kinna, you have hate, and you have and you have jealousy. Okay, all the things you don't want for your own family, you have from the very outset of this family. It's revolving around. You have tremendous tension. Vatomer el Yaakov, avali banim v'im ayin meta anochi. Give me children, I'm going to die. And Jacob gets angry. Hatachat Elokim anochi, am I instead of God? And the rabbis are very harsh with Jacob, that Jacob should not have spoken. What did God have to recompense? I don't understand the question. Why did God have to recompense Leah for being hated? God didn't in the text tell Leah to marry Yaakov, so why? Again, I don't know the answer. It's a kind of God question. All I would say is that God clearly felt a tremendous amount of rachmanut, a sense of pity on Leah, and therefore he felt that she was owed something. Did it have to be that way? I don't know, but that's, you know, I don't have an... But the Bible presents this, and then, of course, the rest of the story, the Bible continues and tells us more tension. The Bible tells us in chapter 30, verse 14, so not only is it a triangle of tension between Leah, Rachel, Leah, Yaakov, Yaakov, Rachel, Rachel, Leah, now the children get involved. That's the worst. You want to always protect the children. So now we have verse 14, chapter 30, verse Vayelech Reuven b'yemei Ketzir Chitim vayimtza dudaim basadeh vayaveh otam el Leah imo. So he brings mandrakes. Now he's not just bringing mandrakes. Why am I leaving out Lavan? I'm leaving out Lavan because I only have an hour. And so I want to actually get to Parshat Vayeshev. So the Bible tells us, Vatomer Rachel le'at nina li midudae b'nech. Give me the mandrakes. Clearly, in the ancient world, the mandrakes are some sort of aphrodisiac. We know from many other portions of the Bible. And we have this tension where they start to fight about who should sleep with the husband. Vatomer Rachel, lachen yishkav imcha laila tachat dudae b'nech. And again, you have this tension here that Leah actually says to him, I bought the conjugal rights tonight. I mean, that's not such a great way of, to say the least, it's not the greatest line, pickup line and foreplay that we can think of, to say the least, if you talk about tension. And of course, then she has some more children. At some point, God remembers Rachel, and Rachel, of course, feels also hated, or not hated, or shamed. And she says, Vatar vatelet bein vatomer asaf Elohim et cherpati. God has gathered, vatikra et shmo Yosef, lemor Yosef, Hashem li bein acher. God should give me another child. Not such a great name. You're already thinking about the next child. Talk about how intense that tension in the family is. Again, it's very, very striking. But at this point, Jacob recognizes, meaning he's had already 12 children, if you count Leah, or 11 children, if you count Dina, and yet he was very comfortable. He didn't leave. He only is ready to leave when he has a child from Rachel. That's when he says, notice, Vahik asher yaldar Rachel et Yosef, verse, chapter 30, verse 25. When Rachel had Joseph, Vayomer Yaakov Lavan, Shalcheni ve'elchal mekomi. Now I can fulfill my vow to return to this place, which was called Beit El. Now I can return to the vow. Why not before? Because he didn't feel that he really had a family until he had a child from Rachel. Talk about tension. Talk about, I mean, maybe they wanted to leave, 3 years before. But no, until he had a child from Rachel, he couldn't feel like he could return, and he didn't feel like God had fulfilled his destiny with him, and now he could return. And so now, of course, he leaves, and I'm not going into the whole story, but he eventually has a reconciliation with Esav. He comes back, and one thinks that everything should be great. Unfortunately, of course, we have chapter 34, which the Bible emphasizes. So again, just to summarize, until we get to the rape of Dina, we already know this is a family full of tremendous tension. It's a marriage that started with tremendous tension between the two wives. And that's why in the Bible, of course, when you're married to two women, it's called a tzara. It's not by chance. Tzara literally means sorrow or pain or suffering, because it often involves that of tension and competition. And here too, so we have that. We already seen competition between the women. We also see that the children have already gotten involved, specifically Reuven, who is the Bechor, We then see the story of Dina. And again, I'm not teaching the story of Dina, but one thing is clear. Who gets involved in the story of Dina? First of all, the Bible goes out of its way to tell us, Vateitse Dina bat Le'ah asher yalda l'ra'ak Yaakov. Again, we're not stupid. We've just read the chapters. We know that Dina is the daughter of Leah. But the text wants to emphasize Dina bat Leah. This is happening to the daughter of Leah. It's not happening to anybody else. And the Bible, of course, tells us the stories of the rape of Dina, the capture of Dina, the hostage taking, and the reaction of the children, the brothers. And the brothers are very angry. And who's specifically angry? The Bible tells us who's specifically angry. It tells us that Shimon and Levi are angry. Shimon and Levi, of course, are the next two children of the Leah line. So we saw Reuven getting involved in the story. We see Shimon and Levi get involved in the story. The next two children, the next two leadership roles, going and killing the city. And clearly, they get involved and they attack, and Yaakov is not happy. And the Bible ends the chapter on a note, Vayomru, Shimon and Levi said, right? Jacob rebuked Shimon and Levi. Vayomer Yaakov el Shimon v'Levi, chapter 34, verse 30. Vayomer Yaakov el Shimon v'Levi, achartem oti lav isheni b'yoshev aretz baknani raprizivi, ani metei mispar v'nesu alai v'ikuni. Vayomru achazonia yaset achutenu. And they said, will she be made like a prostitute? Which is a very strong thing to say. Parenthetically, Rabbi Silber, I still remember this from 40 years ago, noted, interestingly enough, and we'll come back to this, he noted that while verse 30 says, Vayomer Yaakov el Shimon ve'el Levi, in the response it doesn't say, Vayomru elav, and they said back to him. It says, Vayomru. Did they not say it directly to Jacob? Did they go back home and murmur amongst themselves and simply express this anger? It's an interesting point that we have to think about. We then are told about Jacob, who returns to Beit El. He returns to the place where he had left and where he had made the vow. And now he has a family and he is ready to serve God. And it seems like the covenantal destiny will be fulfilled. Chapter 35, verse 9. You have the name change, just like Abraham had a name change back in chapter 17. Number two, Vayomer lo Elohim, ani El Shaddai, pray urve. The same blessing, the same name of God that Abraham received, the same name change, and the same blessing of creation, pray urve, and the same blessing of goy ukahal goyim, a nation and kings will come from you, and I'm going to give you this land. And at this point, it seems that Jacob has reached El HaMenucha of El HaNachala. And yet what happens? His beloved wife dies, which is a tremendous tragedy. And as she has a child, she calls him Ben Oni, the child of my suffering, and might be also the child of my iniquity. It's not so clear. But Jacob was not comfortable with that name, and he called him Binyamin. And so we have a tragedy. We have a family that's returned. Jacob wanted to sit with his beloved wife and drink daiquiris, you know, on the porch in Katamon and go to Kafit and now be able to pass on the covenantal destiny to his family, that for the first time, seemingly no one had to be chosen in or out. Up until this point in the Bible, we've had Cain and Hevel, Lot and Abraham, Yitzchak and Yishmael, Esav and Yaakov. We've had untold challenges. We've had untold pain. We've had untold, and now Yaakov has returned with his entire family. And right at that moment, Rachel dies. But of course, underneath the surface, we know that this idyllic picture is not really so idyllic. We know that this family, there's a lot of tension bubbling under the surface. There's tension between Leah and Rachel. There's tension between, there's Reuven, who's gotten involved in the middle of it by bringing the mandrakes, etc. There's Rachel was angry at Jacob. Jacob was angry at Rachel. We have the rape of Dina, who is the daughter of Leah. The Bible emphasizes this to us. And the question, of course, is, and who gets involved? The two big, besides Reuven, who was involved before, we have Shimon and Levi, the next two children of Leah. They seem to get very involved because are they, is the subtext that, you know, Jacob is not caring enough for the daughters of Leah? Is that part of the subtext? Hachizonaya set achotenu, our sister. So on the one hand, it's very sharp. On the other hand, it shows tremendous devotion and commitment to sister, brother, to the family. So, but there's a family in tremendous tension. And now, just to, in case you didn't get it, the Bible tells us a horrible thing. Verse 22, chapter 35. He sleeps with Bilhah. Who's Bilhah? Bilhah is not the Pilegesh of Leah. She's not the concubine of Leah. She's the concubine of Rachel. Let's understand. What's he doing? When you sleep with the concubine, as anyone who ever studied the book of Shmuel knows, sleeping with a concubine is to replace, to take, you know, the Bible tells us that when David was making, quote unquote, a peace treaty with Yoav, he said, I want you to give me Saul's concubine to show that I'm the king. When Avshalom, when David runs away from Jerusalem and Avshalom usurps the throne, he takes the Pilagshim and sleeps with the Pilagshim in broad daylight of David. It's a statement of usurpation. I'm not going into the whole psychology of it and Freud and whatever. I'm not doing that. But it's pretty clear in the Bible what that's it. So when he sleeps with the concubine of Rachel, I mean, there's so much going on there. One thing is clear. He doesn't sleep with Zilpah. He sleeps with Bilhah. The concubine of Rachel, was it because Rachel, now that Rachel is no longer there, was the concubine going to be moved up in the pecking order and be treated like Rachel, like the Bimkom Rachel in place of Rachel? Is that what Reuven is trying to forestall? Is he trying to make a statement? Unclear. But at this point, there's no more children. And the Bible ends with that. But then we're told about Esav. We're told about Esav because Esav is no longer a factor. We got to get him off the screen. But one thing is fascinating about Esav, for my purpose, from chapter 36. And that is that Esav is, so again, when we finish chapter 35, on the one hand, they're back in the land of Israel. He's received a covenantal blessing, and it's an ironic, tragic covenantal blessing. God says, Pru or Vu, you're going to have a lot of children. He already had children. But he has that final kid, Binyamin. He doesn't have any more children. But at the moment he has the child, his most beloved wife dies. I mean, there's a tremendous irony and tragedy in that. At the moment of the fulfillment. But he doesn't have any kings yet. And he certainly doesn't have a land yet. Because Jacob does not control the land of Israel, to say the least. But Esav, and that's part of the power of chapter 36, which everybody thinks is a boring chapter. It's one of the most interesting chapters in Genesis. But it's very short. Ve'ela toldot Esav hu Edom. These are the generations of Esav, chapter 36. Esav had all these wives, but he also had territory. He leaves the covenantal land because they can't live together. Vayeshev Esav Behar Seir Esav hu Edom, chapter 36, verse 8. Ve'ela toldot Esav. And the Bible tells us exactly his generations. And the Bible tells us where he lived. And the Bible not only tells us where he lived, but the Bible tells us that there were kings. Look at chapter 36, verse 31. Ve'ela hamilachim asher malchu be'eretz Edom lifnei malach melech lifnei Yisrael. Before there was a king! Before there was a king in Israel. I am not going here. That's a totally different shir if Jay wants to invite me to about the biblical criticism issue, that it sounds like the author of this passage knows that there's already kings in Israel and is talking about this, that Esav already had kings before there were kings in Israel. And I'm not going to talk about the fact that one of those kings is named Shaul in verse 38. Vayamat Shaul. Not going to talk about that. And I'm not going to talk about the fact that that the Bible tells us about that about these kings and that these are the people who found, where does it say? Okay. But the point is that Esav is ensconced in the land of Edom, and there's kings. He's established, while Jacob is not established. And now we can start chapter 37. Because chapter 37 tells us what? Chapter 36 and chapter 37, the Rashbam notes, have to be read together. So if you look at chapter 36, verse 8, Vayeshev Esav Bahar Seir Esav Hu Edom. Ve'ele Toldot Esav Avi Edom, etc., etc. Skip to chapter 37. Vayeshev Yaakov Be'eretz Megurei Aviv Be'eretz Kenan Ele Toldot Yaakov. It's a total parallel. Vayeshev Esav was ensconced in the land of Edom, while Jacob was only Be'eretz Megurei Aviv. He was in the land that his father had traversed. A little bit unclear. Does he actually control the land? Does he not control the land? Ela Toldot Yaakov. And now these are the generations of Yaakov, except in contrast to Esav, who we want to get off the scene very quickly. Jacob is part of the covenantal destiny, history, etc. So we have to talk at length about what happened to Jacob and his family. So now we can start chapter with all this background. We now start chapter 37 because chapter 37 is now pregnant with meaning. You have Jacob who's trying to ensconce himself in the land of Israel, fulfill his covenantal destiny, establish that this place and this family will pass on the covenantal destiny. But at the same time, it's a family bubbling with trouble. It's a family bubbling with tension from the very outset of the Leah-Rachel conflict. The children already got involved in the Leah-Rachel conflict, Reuven, Shimon and Levi. Rachel had died, which probably also put a pall on the situation. Reuven slept with the concubine. So not just, he didn't just take the Dudaim, but he did even something more. Meaning, this is a family in, already before we start, there's a tremendous amount of tension. And we now find out about Joseph. Ela Todot Yaakov Yosef ben Shvasrei Shana Haya Roet Echav Batzon Vehu Nar Et Bnei Bilav Et Bnei Zilpan Eshe Aviv Vayave Yosef Et Dibatam Ra'al Avihem. So I just, again, I'm just going to make his comments. Obviously, there's many different interpretations, many parshanim. I'm not relating to everything. I just want to highlight some of the things I want to highlight. Because I got the mic. So I'll just highlight the things I want to highlight. Okay. So first of all, I do want to point out that the Bible does not talk about Binyamin in this chapter, which raises the interesting possibility that Binyamin is not born yet. We all know that the Bible, especially in Genesis, does not necessarily follow chronological order. I'm not talking about Ein Muktam U'Me'uchar Batorah, that the Bible, I'm talking about the fact, like, for example, Isaac died at the end of Parshat. What Parsha does he die? In Parshat Vayetze, I think he dies at the end of Parshat Vayetze. But if you actually do the math, Isaac is still alive when Joseph is sold. But we're not really interested in, once the covenantal baton has been passed, so you're out of the scene. You die. You either literally die or you're not talked about anymore. And so your death and your discussion is done. Okay? So just again, so here too, the Bible wants to focus in on what happened to Yosef. And therefore, it's not so, we're not, Binyamin may not have, Binyamin may be born back in chapter, but this story may have started. I'm not saying it ended. Obviously, Binyamin's alive later on, 17 years later. But Binyamin may not have been alive. And that's why maybe later on in the narrative, Joseph is so insistent that Benjamin come down because he never knew that he had a brother. Maybe that when he was sold into slavery, maybe Joseph never even knew that he had a brother. It also will explain other things in this story as well. But again, that's a side point, but it's something to think about and research. Ela toldot Yaakov Yosef ben 17. Now the Bible tells us he was 17 years old. Why do we need to know that? First of all, there's an interesting parallelism. He's 17 years old, means he lives with his father for 17 years before he is exiled. Later on, the Bible is going to tell us that Jacob goes down to Egypt and he's in Egypt for 17 years of his life. He dies 17 years. So there's a parallelism of when.
99.9%.
I'm sorry? Did somebody ask a question? Okay. Okay. So there's a parallelism in terms of the time that he spent with his father. He spent his father 34 years. 17 at the beginning, 17 at the end. But it also is telling us that he's a young man. And it emphasizes he's a young man. But it starts with an interesting thing. Ela toldot Yaakov Yosef ben 17 shana, haya ro'eh et echav batzon. So the best way to read this is to read it as kind of two halves. Ela Yosef ben 17 shana, haya ro'eh et echav batzon. That's general. He was 17. And he was a shepherd with his brothers. So at the beginning of the story, he's with his brothers. He's still with his brothers. He's shepherding. You can read the next part again as a prat and klal. The hu na'ar, which parallels ben 17 shana. He was a teenager. And he was a na'ar at b'nei bilav, at b'nei zilpah, together with b'nei bilav, b'nei zilpah, nishay aviv. Who was he with? Interestingly, so again, you can read this as, the Ramban reads it as klal uprat. It's like two halves. It's the general principle. Yosef ben 17 shana yaro et echav batzon. Now we unpack that. What does that mean? Hu na'ar. He was a young man. Et b'nei bilha. Who is the echav? The echav doesn't include everybody. The echav is only b'nei bilha and b'nei zilpah, the b'nei ashvachot, the children of the concubines. Who's he not with? B'nei le'ah, the children of Leah. There's too much enmity between already at the very beginning of the story is laying, you look like it's strange. Yeah, I mean, you're laying the groundwork. And moreover, Vayave Yosef adibatam ra'a el avihem. Joseph brings evil speech to their father. What are they doing? Text doesn't say. The Midrash is very creative here, but on a pshat level, we don't know exactly. Vayave Yosef at dibatam ra'a el avihem. Now it's interesting. Very, very interesting thing. I want to point out two things. One that I heard from Rabbi Silber and the other that Rabbi Yoni Grossman suggests. Rabbi Silber noted that the text says literally Vayave Yosef et dibatam ra'a. Joseph brought, how do you translate dibatam ra'a? So we're always brought up that he brought back speech about the evil things they did. But that's not what the word actually says. It says dibatam ra'a. He brought back their evil speech. He brought back what they said, not what they did. It doesn't say vayomer Yosef. Right? It says vayave Yosef a dibatam ra'a. So Rabbi Silber once suggested, what is the dibatam ra'a? Hachizona yaseh tachotenu. He brought back those words that they said in private, about Jacob. He brought back that to Jacob. It's a fascinating suggestion, because otherwise you have to really read into the story. Vayove Yosef et dibatam ra'a, as he brought back speech about evil things they did, which is a very convoluted way of saying that in biblical Hebrew. Yoni Grossman notes, interestingly enough, one would have expected At this moment, if I was writing the narrative, if I was, Thomas Mann, when he wrote, I would have written, Vayisne'u Echav, and his brothers hated him for bringing this Dibara'ah. Doesn't say that. It only says that they started to hate him, ki ahav aviyem. Right? Look at the next verse. V'Yisrael ahavet Yosef mikol banav ki ben zkulim hu lo, v'asalo ktonet pasim. And Israel loved Joseph. And it's interesting. It's not, in biblical Hebrew, I would have said, v'yahav Yisrael et Yosef, v'asalo ktonet pasim, v'yuechav. Doesn't say that. It says, v'Yisrael ahavet Yosef. It's an ongoing action. The ktonet pasim is not just, the ktonet pasim is a sign of melucha, of dominance. We know that clothing, make the man and uniforms. We all know that. And later on in Tanakh. But it's interesting. It doesn't say that they got angry or they hated him because of the dibara'ah. Why not? Why not? That's what I expect. When it says that the father loved them, and he gave them ktonet pasim, then it says, vayru echav ki oto avim, vayisnu oto. And then later on, when he dreams, and he tells them the dreams, vayisnu oto. Okay? What's this? Say Israel loved instead of Jacob loved? Yeah, why does it say Israel instead of Jacob? Again, probably because we're dealing with very covenantal kind of future. I'm going to mention that at the end. I'll talk about that. Wow, time goes by so fast. Okay, so the covenantal. So why doesn't it say that they hated him because of the Dibara'ah? It's like, we expect that to have, the love of the father, which is expressed in the Ktonet Pasim, that is brought as a reason why they hated him. The Chalomot, the dreams, that's a reason that they hated him. But when it comes to the Dibara'ah, it doesn't say it. If you're wild pshat, was not correct. We cannot understand why it's Yosef and not Binyamin, who is the Ben Zakunim, a problem that bothered the commentators. Right, exactly. We now understand, exactly. I was going to get to that. Jay, you jumped the gun. But so it's almost like like they say in a drama, Chekhov, the gun that appears on the table in the first scene has to show up in the third scene. Something has to happen. So how come nothing happens with the Dibara'ah? Why doesn't it say they hated him? And so Rabbi Grossman suggested something very, I think, very insightful, that maybe it's we don't find out about that because it's not really about the brothers. Maybe the brothers never even hear that Joseph brought that. And the reason it's here is to tell us about the development of the character of Joseph, because later on in the Bible, in the narrative, Joseph has a number of opportunities to also bring back evil tidings about the brothers. For example, at the end of the story, he never tells Jacob, what my brothers did to me? In fact, he makes up a lie that my father said to me, don't hurt you. We maybe this is dropped here in order to talk about the development of Joseph. Later on, with all of his problems, one of the things that he grows is that he will ultimately learn that you don't tell on your brothers, that you don't undermine your brothers. Ultimately, he saves his brothers. And ultimately, even after Jacob dies, he doesn't take vengeance from the brothers. So it's part of the literary development of Joseph, as opposed to part of the reason why the brothers hate him. Now, Jay said correctly that the text says, V'Yisrael ahavet Yosef mikol banav ki ben zekunim hulo. And all the mefarshim are so troubled by, what do you mean ki ben zekunim hulo? Because he was the youngest. He's not the youngest. Binyamin was the youngest. If you accept the notion that, at least at the very beginning of the story, because this story can be taking place over weeks, months, years. We don't know. We don't know how long it took. V'Yisrael ahavet Yosef mikol banav. They couldn't speak to him in peace. and they hated him, which of course is continuing, and it's an ironic twist. Leah was hated, and now Yosef is hated. But the text continues. Vayachalom Yosef chalom vayaget lecha vayosifu od sino oto. Notice, interestingly enough, the Netziv noticed this in his commentary. It says, the brothers saw that he was beloved. I'm sorry, that was the first part. Vayachalom Yosef chalom vayaget lecha vayosifu od sino oto. And as Rabbi Silber noted correctly, it's a play on words. Vayosifu od sino oto. They added to the hate. Yosef li bein acher. God should add a child. And instead, what does Yosef bring? He just brings more sin'ah, more hate. But the Netziv notes correctly that they hate him before they even hear the dream. It's interesting. The Bible tells us the result before the action. It says, Vayachalom Yosef chalom, vayaged lechav, vayosifu od sino oto. This is before the Bible presents what he said in the dream. It's an interesting construction of the narrative to say to us that the very fact that he told them the dream was enough. He could have told them, I saw rainbows and unicorns. But the fact that he was saying it to them and it somehow was relevant to them was enough to get them, okay? That's what the Netziv, just to read you outside the language of the Netziv, okay? The language of the Netziv, Rav Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin. So the Netziv says, Od lo higia hamikra l'spor l'saper ha-chalom, el al hagadat ha-chalom shalo sifu sinah. The very fact that he told it was already enough to create sinah. Yeh eza chalom shiyeh. Okay? And this is the fact, because why would Joseph be telling them dreams? So then let's read the dream. Vayomer aleihem shimuna chalom azeh shechalamti. Listen to the dream I dreamed. V'nei anachnu me'almim alumim b'toch hasadeh. We were engaged in bringing up sheaves. Me'almim alumim b'toch hasadeh. V'nei kam alumati v'gam nitzava. So everybody's noted, of course, that he's talking about agriculture, even though they're not farmers, they're ro'etzon, they're shepherds. Obviously, he's projecting to the future about the control of the economy, which is eventually what he was going to do. He was going to become the controller of the economy. They understand very well. Vayosifu od sino oto al chalom otav al dvarav. Vayachalom od chalom acher. Verse 9. He has another dream. Vayisaper oto lecha. Vayomer hinei chalamti chalom od. Hinei hashemesh vayareach vachar asar kochav mishtachamim li. Vayisaper el aviv elecha. Vayigarbo aviv. Vayomer lo mah chalom azesh chalamti. Havo navo ani veimi imi. Imcha vachech lishtachavod lecha arza. Vayikan'u bo echav. I want to make a few points, and those points will probably take us to the end of the shiur. Point number one, which also connects with that wild shot that Jay called it, the wild shot. Notice that he says, he moves away, of course, from talking about agriculture to talking about people. V'nei shemesh v'yarech v'achad asar kochavim mishtachavim li, to me. And the father says, will I and your mother and your brothers come to bow down to you? And everybody goes crazy. What do you mean your mother? Your mother died in chapter 35. But if this part of the story happened prior to the death of Rachel, then it may be that in Hachanami, that that's what happens. Even before. So then you'll ask me, so then what's the 11? So the 11th is Dina. The 11th is Dina. There are 10 boys and a Dina and a girl. No doubt about it. So one could read it that way in terms of pshat. It's a chalom. I don't know what the chalom ultimately, but that may be reading. But I want to go deeper. Notice the reaction of the brothers. Vayikan'u bo'echav. Three times we've had sin'ah, hate. When they hear that the father loved the Joseph, v'Yisrael ahav Yosef mikol banav,
Vayeru achav ki oto ahav aviyem, yikol achav ayisnu oto. They hated. The first dream, vayosifu od sno oto. They hated him. He told them the dream. They hated him. But on the second dream, it's not sina anymore. It's not hate. It's jealousy. Now, on the one hand, we close the circle because remember that Leah was hated and Leah also, there was jealousy. There was jealousy. Remember that I showed you in chapter that there's jealousy as well. And here it's reversed. But I want to say something else. And this is again noted by a number of writers. What's the difference between hate and jealousy? Hate is hate. But jealousy means you start to think, oh, this is really going to happen. And you start to have jealousy. Why did they start to think it's going to happen? Why did they think that maybe this is really going to happen? First of all, because it's the second dream. And we know that in the Bible, when you have the same dream twice, what does Joseph say to Pharaoh? Val hishanot achalom. Why did it happen twice? Ki nachona elokim lasoto, umahera elokim lasoto. Because it's really true, and it's going to happen, and it's going to happen soon. So that's already something. They understood. Number two, notice Jacob's reaction. The first reaction to the first dream, it's vayigarbo aviv. It says, the first reaction is Jacob is angry at them. Vayisaper el aviv, to Joseph. Vayigarbo aviv. He gave him musar. He got angry at him. Are we going to bow down? But the second time, the father kept it. What do you mean kept it? The father, he's angry, but he also keeps it in his memory. Maybe something's going on here. And when the brothers see that, the father also sees there's something going on here. Vayikanu bo echav. There's something going on here. And what I'd like to close with is the fact is that what the brothers understand.
First question. Did Yaakov knew about Brit Ben Aftarim?
Let him finish first.
I don't know, but my assumption is yes. He got the Brit Hamilah. He got the covenantal blessing, I assume. He also knew about Brit Ben Aftarim in some way. I assume. All I wanted to end with was the fact that given the fact that the book of Genesis is all about what's called in Hebrew, Bechira and Dechiyab, being included and being excluded. Kayin Hevel, Lot, Avraham, Esav, this one, Yishmael, da, 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 da. It's all about who's in and who's out. Is it so crazy that the brothers who grew up in this tension-filled house around who is beloved, who is covenantal, would have seen everything that's going around them as maybe there's going to be another act of choosing, that the Rachel line is going to continue and our line is going to be pushed out, that we are going to suffer the same fate as what happened to previous generations. And then the tension and the enmity is not just about a coat. It's not about a coat. Coat is symbolic of a much deeper question. Is it going to be like what happened to Esav? Is it going to be like what happened to Yishmael? And it's very interesting, and this is for another shir, that it also plays the other way. Joseph is thrown into the pit, and he is picked out by Orchot Yishmaelim, by the Ishmaelites, going down to Egypt.
I mean, think about the resonance of this. It has the echoes of the entire Hagar Yishmael story, where the child is almost dead. She throws the child. That's what the language, Vayashlech et hayeled, which is the same language used by Joseph. Vayishlech oto el habor. They threw him into the pit. And ultimately, he's saved. He revives from almost death and goes down to Egypt and marries in Egypt, and the destiny is in Egypt. And ultimately, Joseph is also almost dies and then is picked up by the Orchot Yishma'elim, by the caravan going down to Egypt, and almost gets cut off from the covenantal destiny until he can be brought back in. And until Jacob brings Joseph and his children back, the covenantal family can't happen because it's been rendered asunder. And it's until Jacob says, Ephraim Menashe Kir Uveni Shimon Yuli, and he brings everybody back, and that the family will be restored. But it's really up for grabs when we start chapter 37. Okay, so we did at least the beginning of a shir on Parshat HaShavua. I wish everybody a wonderful Shabbat and a great time.
Amazing. That was fabulous. Fascinating. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Rav Nadi. Thank you, really. Yes, Yeshua.
Thank you. Wonderful.
Shabbat shalom.
Next week, Ruth Shane, who's here, comes to so many of her classes. We'll be giving the shiur next Thursday night. I'll say now, I haven't even told you yet. Please, God, I'll be on a plane to Israel. So I feel actually quite, what can I do? But for a good cause. So I'll have to listen afterwards. So like I mentioned in the beginning, I'll be going for the first time since before COVID. Two of my kids are in Israel, so it's time to visit. And so whatever. So, and then I'll probably next Friday, we'll discuss at the shir tomorrow, at the regular shir tomorrow is regular time at 9:30, my Seder shir, or at Hashem Levadecha, we're towards the end, the Pesukei Nezirim, at the book of Nehemiah now, very interesting thing, background to the Tfilot, but I'll have to probably do next week, do the shir, I don't know, 8 a.m, we'll figure out, we'll talk about it tomorrow. And then, of course, next week, besides Benny Gesundheit is going to kick off the week now with the second part of his shir, the menorah of Zechariah at 10 o'clock. And Rabbi Liebtag will be giving a two-part mini, all our Hanukkah series, our mini-series on my Hanukkah, where he'll give his regular stop of switching on to Hanukkah. And then on Monday, Lindy Guhartz will be back along with, I forget, who else is on Monday? And Rabbi Arishwat, the Maccabees, we got all kinds of interesting stuff. And then on Wednesday, Yoni Feintuch is making his debut on Zoom. I see Nadi is shaking his head. Yoni Feintuch is one of the experts on Agadah, sort of the new burgeoning field in Israel. I didn't even know how to say it in English. Shilu between Halacha and Agadah, sort of how do you say that in English?
Integration.
And the integration.
Synthesis.
He's written a number of books. He was actually born in Toronto. Those may know his father, his uncle and I daven in the same shul. His father made Aliyah as a young child. There's also a big Talmud Chacham, but Yoni Feintuch teaches at Bar Ilan. And like I said, we've taken Agadah. So he's going to be talking about the Gemara and Avodah Zarah, I believe, on Hanukkah. So that'll be Wednesday at 12 o'clock and all our regular classes during the week, next week. So we look forward to seeing you and everybody. And if I may, to those who are here, if you'd like to donate to Torah Motion before the year end, that's greatly appreciated. And there's not prohibited to donate even if you have already in the year. It's not Baltosi if we don't believe in that. But anyways, and if you haven't, please do. But we're glad you can all be here. And like I say, always invite a friend. And okay, pleasure to see everybody. And thank you. We're working on the winter schedule for 2023. Always hoping, happy to hear your ideas and suggestions. Okay, Laila Tov, everybody. And lots to think about. Okay, hopefully we'll see you. We'll see those of you in the morning next week. And Laila Tov and Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom. Laila Tov.